With everyone fighting for attention, how can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy, with Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning marketplace platform has helped millions of small businesses stand out, stay top of mind, and see big results fast. It's okay if you don't know much about marketing. Constant Contact's writing assistant tools and automation features help you craft messaging and say the right things at the right time. I use this to help write and send my email newsletters, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
This episode of the Golf Gambler Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network is presented by WynnBET. Get started today and you get a risk-free bet for up to $500. Terms and conditions apply. Get the details at WynnBET.com and download the app today. And we're also brought to you by Better Than Vegas. Better Than Vegas is your home for the free daily video picks from the SGPN crew. It's like YouTube for sports gambling. Make sure to subscribe to our profile at SportsGamblingPodcast.com/BTV. That's SportsGamblingPodcast.com/BTV. And we're also brought to you by Riffer. Riffer is your home for mini podcasts from the Sports Gambling Podcast Network. Subscribe to our Riffer channel today at sportsgamblingpodcast.com/Riffer. That's sportsgamblingpodcast.com/RIFFR. All right, welcome back, you D-Gens. It is the Zurich time. So if you're listening, we know you're a D-gen. We love these type of tournaments for the most part. This one, you know, whatever. We'll still get our money down, but we're really going to focus on some of the upcoming major. And Steve's going to drop some knowledge on us so we can hopefully get some good numbers of some guys that are going to lead us to lots of money. So it's myself, Boston Capper, and the God of Golf himself, Steve. What's Shermer? What's up, buddy?
I mean, I just woke up from my nap from over the weekend at RBC Heritage. That was a snoozer.
It was terrible. Listen, yeah. I was so happy I was away. I was like, oh, this is boring as shit. Nice. Thank us. Like, I don't have to, I'm not sweating.
Yeah, Sink did you a favor by running away with it on it was over after Friday. I mean, he shot 63-63, and then, you know, everybody got excited. I mean, I think everyone in the world had a Morikawa bet. I was on record of saying, well, you know what, maybe that's overrated, Pete Dye golf courses, and you know, that take I got shoved in my face. But you know what? On Sunday, though, he didn't do great. And, you know, it was just all about the Sink family on Sunday. So, yeah, you listen, good for him. 47 years old. I did not think of the two guys who are two-time winners this year, it would be Bryson DeChambeau and Stewart Sink.
Opposite ends of the fucking spectrum.
Yeah, completely. But, no, I mean, I remember when around his first one back at the Safeway, that was when we first started the podcast. We were talking about the secret to success for him. He's gained a ton of distance off the tee.
Like, he's not short at all.
No, he isn't anymore. And I think this is what Stewart Sink is doing right now is I think what Phil wanted to do. And it went really horribly for him. But Sink, I mean, like, he hasn't lost much of his accuracy. He hits it a mile off the tee now. And, like, his iron's good. He putt great. And that's how you do it. So
he's putting from off the green. It was ridiculous.
I know. Yeah. I mean, when you shoot back-to-back 63s,
yeah,
like, you know, yeah, you're gaining a lot. I think on Sunday, he didn't even hit a putt at all. Just he was.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, he knew he was in cruise. He just didn't want to lose the tournament at that point.
Right. I mean, the only guy that came close on Sunday was Griot, and then there was Will, who does a lot of good tennis bets on our Slack channel. If you want to go follow him, he's up like 30 units over the past like week or so
on tennis.
Yeah, you should go join the Slack channel there. I mean, right, they're making money just like we are. So
you're talking about Will Mormon, right?
Yeah, Will Mormon. Yeah. Okay. So anyways, he was like, oh, who should I fire on? I'm like, oh, you know, maybe Griot, but I don't know if I trust his putter a whole lot in order to make a run. And right on cue, Griot missed like a 5-foot. I'm like, yep. Oh, this thing's over. So yeah, Sink wins. So what do you think about the chatter to put Stewart Sink on the Ryder Cup team in September? That face says it all.
Yeah, no, like while he is longer off the tee, I mean, it was insane. Like, I feel like he's comfortable at this course. Obviously, he's won here, so he knew where to miss, right? Like, the dude, what did he hit, like 8 fairways in the first 2 days or something stupid? Like, he was all over the place, but he missed on the right side and was obviously insanely hot with his putter and his irons. Like, no thanks. There's way too many younger golfers who are better.
Yeah, I mean, it's if you look at some of his other results, I mean, played well at the Masters, played well at Honda. I mean, this is kind of a little bit of a crescendo for him. But otherwise, between the Safeway and a couple weeks ago, he really didn't do anything.
Yeah.
He's still, like, even though he's won twice, he's only 24th in Ryder Cup points. That's not great. Yeah. And it's just it's really crowded at the top of the leaderboard there. So
there's too much talent on the American side.
Yeah, if he wins again and maybe comes in, like, a top 10 at a major, like the PGA coming up maybe – you know what? Maybe I'll start entertaining that, but
yeah.
No, I think it's a cool story. The fact that he, you know, it's him and Westwood have kind of revitalized their career in their late stages. And
they both keep family on the bag. Like, that's pretty fucking cool.
Yeah, that is cool. I mean, like, I know CBS really jammed it down our throats, but what are storylines that they're supposed to talk about, though? I mean,
yeah, exactly.
You know, no one was making a charge for him. And, you know, the only guy that people, you know, were hoping to was Morikawa, who reverted right back to the awful putter that we know him to. Like, I'm wondering, and, you know, it was what I was dreading heading into this week, that everyone was on Morikawa and I wasn't. And, like, it was the FOMO thing I was going to do. And the last time we had this was at the WGC concession, and he ended up putting great.
I know.
I'm starting to question, is what we saw at concession, was that just an outlier week?
Shit, man. I don't know. Like, I guess you would have to say, yeah, just based on what he did, what he's done since. What's funny is like, he was talking to somebody on Saturday night. I was outside smoking a butt and, I was reading it and he was like, he said something. Well, I think I was working on my putter and I think I might have found something. And he's like, and the guy was like, well, what did you find? He's like, I guess we'll find out tomorrow. And I was like, fuck. And that's when I fired that stupid fucking anyone but sink bet motherfucker. Mm. Like, thanks for that. Thanks for that dick tease.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't just the putter though. He was terrible with everything. I mean,
yeah, he was not good on Sunday. Yeah.
Yeah. He made a really stinky bogey on two.
Yeah.
It culminated with a short miss putt for par. And after that, the air went out of the balloon and he was done. I mean, it's hard to handicap Morikawa because it really, and somebody pointed out in the Slack channel, if he was just an average putter, like, he would win like every four tournaments, but you just don't know what you're getting from him.
Well, that's kind of why, like, that's kind of why if they hang a bad number on him or even like a decent number, because we know that if he just he's going to win if he just putts average or above average. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know, man. It's going to be hard to stay away from him. But, I mean, that Sunday was bad. Like, bad.
Yeah, it was. And I had a bunch of matchups against him, which all lost. And I actually ended up hedging those a little bit with the top five. And guess what? That lost, too. I actually texted my co-host here on Friday. Just despondent. Just absolutely.
He was. It was what I call you, apoplectic Steve.
Yeah,
I don't like apoplectic Steve, man.
Yeah, I mean, like, listen, all my pre-tournament matchups were terrible. Like, I went, I think, 1-for-2 on Friday. I ended up hitting, you know, when they have the circuit breaker and like the stock market, you just stop trading. That's what happened to me on Friday. I just stopped trading after that. And actually, you know what? A couple things turned around over the weekend. Some top 10s and top 20s I had. They actually ended up turning around and actually making money. But on Friday, I texted my co-host here. I said, listen, all these matchups are going to hit. And Morikawa's going to finish like T6. And that's exactly what happened. So couldn't even hedge those properly. But I don't know. I got nothing else in this tournament. Like, usually we talk about the DFS report card and basically chalk hit this week. And except for a couple players, like, I was on Patrick Cantlay pretty hard. And it turns out the putting woes he had at the Masters, it wasn't just a one-time thing. He actually changed putters. And that went terrible this week.
We really need a fucking Adam Schefter for this shit. I mean, it is ridiculous that we don't find this information out until after.
Like, well, here's the thing. I had three. I was heavy on three guys. I was heavy on Cantlay this week. I was heavy on Kisner this week. And I ended up having to pay that charity bet off of Fleetwood.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Thank you. But you know what all three of those guys did this week? All three of those guys changed putters this week. And the news broke on like Wednesday night. It's like, or Thursday morning on Golf WRX. Like, where is this stuff like on Monday?
Yeah, because this guy's out there watching them do the practice rounds, watching them do shit. Like, come on, somebody's got to spill. Like, come on, man. Like, I don't know. It's Yeah, I gotta say that's one thing I'm taking away from here. Like, I do not do enough. I should have done a lot better. Like, I call a lot of the golfers who I liked, did well. I barely bet any top 10s and top 20s just because they're not exciting. But, I mean, 2 weeks in a row, like, come on. Like, I need to start doing the top 10s and top 20s, even though they're not sexy. Like, I can't just grind with my matchups. I have to grind with top 10s and top 20s, too.
Yeah, because, I mean, if you're just off of this tournament like I was, I thought this was going to be a lower-scoring tournament, the weather turn, and then it turned to basically RBC Wyndham. Yeah, yeah, all my matchups went to shit after that. So, yeah, it's just, listen, it was a one-time week. We got the Zero coming up. We're not going to go heavy on that. We'll touch on that in a little bit. But so one last thing before we close the RBC Heritage. You know, do you have anybody you want to put on a boat? Or is it too far away right now that you just,
you know? Have I put Cantlay on a boat yet?
I think you have before.
Are you sure?
I don't know. We need someone to go back in time and, like,
somebody needs to track this shit because I don't. I mean, look, Cantlay fucking killed me because I was like you. Like, I talked myself into him. I was like, look at this fucking course history. Like, I don't personally like him, but clearly this is a golf course he likes. Ba, 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 ba. Now, just came out in the same fucking limp dick. Like, I do not like Cantlay. I just do not. Like, that's okay. It. Like, I'm done with him. I mean, other than that, I mean, nobody really killed me other than him and DFS as far as, like, betting goes. Like,
What about Sergio? You're high on him, and I think he had a good first round. And then
He did. He shot like a 4 or 5 over or something like that. I was pretty pissed about that. But it's Sergio. Like, you know what you're getting when you bet him. You know what I mean? Like, it's different with a Cantlay where doubling or tripling the size of my bets on outrights because the number's so short to make it worth it for me. And when I buy in on a guy like that, I expect the return a lot more than fucking Sergio. Sergio misses cut, I'm like, man, it's fucking Sergio. I'm not pissed because I just dumped fucking 3X units on fucking cocksucking Happy Feet Cantlay.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, well, I'm going to put somebody on a boat. It's going to be happy. You're going to be happy. It's Fleetwood.
Yeah. Come on, baby.
I'm done. I am done.
Okay.
I'm done.
I'm done.
I need to see something from him first, which means he's probably going to go out. And is he playing the Zurich this week?
He's actually not playing the Zurich.
Okay. All right. Well, then fine. He's going to go out, probably win the PGA and probably stuff in all our faces. So.
Oh, my God, dude. I will cry if that happens.
You probably will, because you're going to have a lot of money against Fleetwood. And not only are you going to lose all those matchups and whatever, he's going to win and dunk on your face.
Yeah, so. Exactly. Hey, but how about this? I'm not really worried about it.
Yeah. Honestly, I don't think I am either.
What about your boy Casey? You worried about him?
No, it's... The putting was carrying him for a while there, and it seems like that has now gone back the other way. Mm. And it started at the Masters, and then he went crosshand in the final round that worked. And that's my fault, because I just know that, like, when guys make, like, an immediate switch like that, usually the first time it works, and then it goes to hell right after that. And that's exactly what happened this tournament. It went to hell again.
Exactly.
That's not encouraging that's starting to go away, because now you're going back to old Paul Casey. Basically, you're going back to a worse version of Colin Morikawa. So
yeah, that's a good way to put it.
It's not great, Bob. And not great. It's going to be interesting to see. I know he's going to play Quail Hollow, which he actually plays pretty well, Quail Hollow, in a couple weeks. And then the PGA. And there's a lot of things about those two golf courses that fit his game pretty well, because they're both ball strikers golf courses. But if that putter's not working, that might be pretty disastrous. And that's what happened this week. So we'll see.
All right, cool. I actually got to go back and look and see how many guys. I should have done it before this show, so I'll try to pull it up. But, like, who I already have outrights on for the PGA. I know I have a few. I can't remember off the top of my head. I know I have more than I can think about. So I'm like, who am I missing?
We'll touch on those at the end of the show.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, cool. So, all right, well, listen, before we break anything else down, WynnBET is bringing you the action of real sports betting with the Wynn Las Vegas experience. Get in on all your favorite teams, players, and sports games. Generous promos, odds, parlays are happening right now at WynnBET. Get started today, and you'll receive a special offer for up to a $500 risk-free sports bet. Terms and conditions do apply. Get details at wynnbet.com and download the app today. So one number I saw there that I actually liked, and a bet that I already had somewhere else, and this is a much better number. I flipped the wrong page. Where'd it go? It was It was Bradley and Steele at .400 plus .400.
Of course, you're betting Keegan this week.
Of course, listen. So Steve knows I was very busy. I had some shit go down after work today. So like, it was grumpy, tired capper when we first fucking started. I only caught little tidbits of shit when I was driving home today. But one thing I heard is that Keegan hasn't lost strokes on approach since last year's PGA Championship.
No, he hasn't. He's been great. Yeah. And that's going to work really well in a putting contest this week.
Listen, maybe Steele can get hot. You never know. Or maybe Steele gets in and he can be more aggressive or vice versa. Like, it makes sense. Maybe it changes the mindset.
I mean, the odds you got on WinBet for them, though, is pretty good. They have been playing well. They're a solid combo.
Yeah, I love it. That's Keegan, man. Come on. Stop. Don't hurt me. I'm already in a bad mood, Steve. God damn it. All right. So, what are we going to do now?
Well, why don't we touch on quickly on the Zurich? I mean, this is, I said this at the end of last week's episode, which feels like a million years ago.
It does. Because we did like six the week before that. And then we took Sunday off.
Right, so. We did. So this is a pretty rinky-dink tournament. To pull back the curtain and everything. So this is at TBC Louisiana, which is a Pete Dye golf course, but Pete Dye doesn't, you know, his family and his design company don't really promote the fact that this is Pete Dye, because this is not a very good golf course. If you go to Google Maps and find out where this is, it's literally in the middle of a swamp. There's nothing around it. I think there's like a go-kart track right next to it. But other than that, like, it's a soupy swamp-ass open, basically. So in order to spice it up, because Zurich is a major advertising partner of the PGA, major sponsor, they decided to basically spice it up and make it a team event, which is great. Like, I'd be fine if it was a team event. It was like one-on-one, like Ryder Cup style. But this is basically the Franklin Templeton Shootout on steroids. And it's just 70. It's, I think, what, 80 teams?
Yeah, it's 80. It's way too
many. And there's a cut down to 35 after Friday. Yeah. It's team event stroke play. So it's two rounds on Thursday and Saturday of foursomes, which is basically every team, whoever has the highest score, that's the score for the hole for the team. And then 2 days of four ball alternate shot, which is kind of cool for television.
Alternate shot's awesome.
Yeah, which is great for television. Like, I think on Sunday it's must watch, you know, especially if there's a couple guys in the mix. But like, betting wise, like, it's a nightmare. And like, it's hard enough, like, trying to gauge like how one golfer is going to do. Like, now try to do a tournament where, you know, basically if one guy just shows up and the other guy doesn't, your team is sunk. So it's tough. I think for gambling wise, throw a couple outrights, just set it and forget it, and just go from there. And then DraftKings, they have special rules this week. So basically you can only select one person per team. So each member has basically the same salary in DraftKings. Once you select a player, you can't select his teammate. And then you just go from there. So, as far as outrights, a couple guys I like, there's some interesting teams. Chris Kirk has been playing really well lately. He's paired up against, paired with Brendan Todd. You know, Kirk's been kind of struggling a little bit with the putter, but his ball striking has been really good. Brendan Todd just lights out with the putter. He can pour on a lot of birdies. They're 22-1. I kind of like him. Max Homa and Taylor Gooch, they've both been playing pretty well over the last like month or so. They're paired together at 28-1. That seems like maybe a good pair for them. They both putt really well too. They can drain a lot of birdies like them. This is a strange pairing, Roberto Castro and Cameron Tringali. They played really well back in 2019. I think they finished T9, and Cameron Tringali's been playing great over the last couple of months, and they're 50-1, so why not take a shot with them? And then, for whatever reason, David Hearn and Seamus Power are a great combo. But I think they finished top 10, I think, every single year, like, since this became a team event.
It's because Seamus Power is one of the greatest names in sports history.
Okay, well, there you go. Well, he's 150-1, so he's Irish, and I know you're probably going to bet him now that I mention him. So, yeah, 151. So those are my four picks. I'll probably bet them and instead forget it and just, you know, check the account to see if there's any more money.
any more money there. So I think I'll actually do the Seamus Power top 10, top 20. I don't think they're going to win. Because have they won? I thought they won this event at some point, didn't they?
No, the three winners are Cam Smith and Jonas Blixt.
Blixt, yeah.
And then it was Billy Horschel and Scott Piercy. after that. It's funny. Like on last week's telecast, they were promoting the Zurich. They're like, "Oh, Billy Horschel, 2-time Zurich Classic winner." I'm like, "Wow." I mean, one of them was a team event. So that's really count. Nice. That's another thing too. It kind of like with the. With the OWGR, they don't count this event at all. You get no world ranking points. You'd have no credit for a win.
But Palmer got to keep his card for
right, because of the PGA Tour, it counts.
Yeah.
But, like, official record keeping, it didn't really count.
That's funny. So I got three down, and I need you to talk to me about one golfer who I probably should know. I don't know a lot. I don't know enough about him. So
there's a lot of guys in this that are right on the fringes that I probably don't really have.
Oh, no, you'll know. Oh, no, you'll know this guy. It's okay. Not very long odds. I just don't know enough about him. The name clicks, but I feel like I haven't seen him in forever. So I'm with you on Homa and Gooch. I like Hovland and Ventura.
So bad though.
I know, but I don't know. Whatever, man. I'm getting third. I'm getting that number with Hovland on the team when I get Danny Willett at 25-1. Thanks. No. You know, okay. Like, and one of the spots we bet if you like Homa and Gooch, they're hanging 300, not 28. 30, not 28.
That number must have moved since I looked earlier.
Yeah, so Homa Gooch, Hov Ventura. I already told you Bradley and Steele. Kokrak and Perez is one I want to kind of get down on. I'm really scared about betting on Pat Perez. Like, that seems ridiculous.
He's been okay. He hasn't been withdrawn. He's all right. Yeah. The only thing I worry about is those two in New
those
Orleans
two together. Exactly. Partying. I think I'm going to have to skip that one. All right. So,
yeah. I mean, and no one takes this event seriously, really.
Yeah.
They're all there for Zurich, pretty much.
All right, so Peter's obviously my seldom talked about spirit animal, Tom Lewis. Like, when the fuck was the last time we saw Tom Lewis?
Didn't he play well at, like, Corrales or something?
Probably. Like, we don't count that.
Or Puerto Rico, maybe.
Yeah, some terrible tournament.
Yeah, like, he's one of those guys that tried to come over here. Like, he had some success over the PGA Tour or on the Euro Tour, came over here because I think he got – he played well at the St. Jude last year. Oh, and then he made it through web.com qualifying school. That's how he got, like, his tour card. He did nothing ever since. Okay. He probably should go back to Europe and kind of, you know, regroup. But, yeah, he hasn't done much since he's been over here.
Okay, that's it then. That's all.
Okay. All right, there you go.
Happy betting, boys. I'm sure we'll throw some first-round leaders out on the Slack channel. And I'm actually going to look into the top 10, top 20s this week, and I'll put some of that out there as well.
All right, absolutely. So you want to go in the PGA?
Let's do it.
All right. So where do you want to start? You want me to start talking about the golf course? You want me to just do a little bit of that? All right.
Yeah, let's start with the golf course, then we can break down, like, the trends the guys are looking for and things like that.
All right, so I'm going to give a very brief overview of the golf course, and in about a month I'll go a little more in depth about the holes, the architecture, how it's designed, everything like that. But I'm just going to give you the basic bullet points. So this is a Pete Dye design. It opened in 1991. It was actually built pretty much in an emergency, kind of a fire drill. They were going to host the Ryder Cup, the 92 Ryder Cup. I forget where it was, either PGA National or somewhere. It basically, the players didn't want to play there. So they built the Ocean course basically as a replacement for that. And they hosted the 92 Ryder Cup. That's a very famous one. It's called the War by the Shore. I think the Americans won like 16.5, 15.5. It was a very tense Ryder Cup. So it's also, if you've seen the movie Legends of Bagger Vance, all those beach scenes with whoever the guys played, Walter Hagen, hitting off the beach. Yeah, that's Akiwa. So And I know we talked a lot about the Xbox golf game in Slack.
Yeah.
There's a mobile game called WGT where you can actually play a lot of major venues, and Kiowa was one of them. So some of it's behind a paywall, but if you want to play Kiowa and, like, kind of get a scouting report of, like, how it plays, you know, download it, play it. You know, it's pretty cool. So as far as design, it's a figure eight design. Basically, it goes out and in, and then the back nine goes out and in. It's very similar to Whistling Straits out in Wisconsin. That's pretty much a direct comparison if you want to compare golf courses. It's pretty much the same layout. You know, they're both really long. From the tips, being stretched to about 7,900 yards. In 2012, it only played 7,700 yards. You know, I say only. So a couple of interesting things about this golf course. It's before the 2012 PGA Championship, it was regressed past Palom grass, which we'll talk about a little later about, you know, what that is, how it's different from, like, Bermuda and bent grass. The fairways are past Palom. The rough is still Bermuda, but it's only 2 inches. So, you know, sometimes you go to, like, an Arnold Palmer Bay Hill, like, it's like 3-4 inch, you know, Bermuda rough. The ball sinks to the bottom. In 2-inch rough, it kind of just sits up top. It's not as big of a factor. And the greens are past palm. So, and then the golf course overall, very open to the elements. It's right on the beach, completely exposed to the wind. There's not many things to aim at off the tee. It's literally just on an island with no infrastructure around. So it's kind of a tough driving course because there's not really anything to aim at off the tee. Not a lot of trees either. There's a lot of room to navigate off the tee from as far as like fairways and rough because there's not any trees like, you know, that are obstructing you. But once you get past the rough, it's bogs, it's waste areas. It's essentially a penalty stroke if you hit into it. So you got to keep it kind of in the lanes, you know, like you don't have to be the most accurate player, but you can't spray it everywhere. And if you have absolutely no control over your ball flight off the tee, you're in for a long day. And then the greens are pretty tough. They're turtleback greens. There's really tight chipping areas around the greens. You know, it's especially the winds are up. It's pretty hard to get up and down for par. So, you know, this is a tough test, especially if the wind blows. I know the 2012 PGA got a little bit of rain, but still scoring was tough, except for one guy who was just a superhuman. And we'll talk about a little later that, you know, that leaderboard and why exactly Rory was able to do what he did.
Okay. Cool. All right. Well, listen, I like that little preview. What do you listen? I know this is your favorite part, the courses and breaking everything down. So I guess this is a good way to roll right into this because you definitely don't need any of this while you're talking about golf courses. All right. So look, no one's perfect. Even the best baseball players strike out with the bases are loaded. The best golfers sometimes three putt with the tournament on the line. So if you feel like you come up short in the bedroom sometimes, it's perfectly okay. But if it's bothering you, there are options. You got to go to GetRoman.com/SGP now. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation for ongoing care for ED, all the comfort and privacy from your own home. A U.S. licensed healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, it ships to you free within 2 business days. The whole process is straightforward and discreet. Getting started is simple. Just go to GetRoman.com/SGP and complete the online visit. Take care of your ED without leaving home. Complete an online visit today to connect with a doctor and take care of it. Go to GetRoman.com/SGP now to get $15 off your first month. Look, there's a straightforward way to take care of your ED. GetRoman.com/SGP. Get started now and save $15 on your first month of treatment. All right.
All right, there you go. You want to talk about grass types?
Come on, baby. I know you're ready for it.
All right. So you're going to sit back and let me wax point.
I'm going to go on mute and sip my gin and tonic.
Yeah, I mean, you could probably just go smoke a cigarette and then get back up to talking about the differences between Pass Pal and Bermuda. So, but this is actually important because we don't see a lot of golf courses on the PGA Tour or even the European Tour that use Pass Pal. I mean, they're all Bentgrass or Bermuda or Poa, and there's only a very select few golf courses that have Pass Pal. And unfortunately, the ones that do have Pass Pal, and we'll talk about it a little bit, none of those strokes gain data. So there's really not a whole lot to go about it. So what is Pass Palm? It's basically a grass that is very tolerant to coastal tropical conditions. So like right on the coast there's a lot of like salt in the air. Like if you ever by the beach or something, you can like taste the salt in the air. Well, salt is generally pretty bad for grass, but Pass Palm, it can survive on it. It still can thrive and grow. You know, when you're by the coast as well, sometimes the clouds can be rolling. You get some storms off the ocean there. It still grows pretty well, even with limited sunlight. And that's basically what this grass does. So what they noticed when they first planted the Bermuda there, because around the coast, like they had trouble sustaining the grass there and growing it. They resod everything with Pass Palm. And now you have pretty lush conditions, and it's much easier to maintain there. So it's also a vertical growing grass type. If you contrast that with Bermuda, that basically grows to the side, it grows where the angle is. There's a lot of grain to it. Here, it's more like a bent grass. It grows straight up. And what that does is balls kind of perch up in the fairway. They perch up a little bit off, you know, around the green. So it's a little easier to, you know, slide the club under the ball and get better contact. And that's why you see, like, with a lot of, like, resort courses, it's Pass Palm. Because it's generally a little easier to hit off of for, like, amateurs like us. Whereas Bermuda, it kind of lays flat. It's harder to chip off of. It's a little easier to do that. It's also very grabby and sticky grass. So once the ball generally hits the turf, it pretty much stops. Like there, when in 2012, they were talking about differences between Bermuda and Paspalum, and they were saying that chipping off it, they couldn't bump and run it. They basically have to fly the ball to the hole because they just wouldn't get a lot of roll out of it, because once it hits the green or hits the fairway, it basically stops. So, especially when it's wet too, it just really just eats. It basically takes all the roll out of the ball. So, and it also means that the green speeds, you can't really get all that fast because there's just a lot of friction between the surface and the ball because it's so grabby. You know, typically optimal greens rolled about 11.5 on the centimeter past Paspalum. That's what they rolled in the 2012 PGA Championship. So they're a little slower on the centimeter. You can push it to 12.5, but that's really as far as it can go. So the green speeds in the PGA are not going to be that quick. We've had debates on this program about do like slower greens favor good putters and bad putters. My co-host here has gone back and forth on both ways, so we'll try and hammer out his take before it. But
I still think you're making that up. I'm pretty sure.
Well, I'm going to find the episode where you said the exact opposite on the Masters podcast. So give me time. I have vacation coming up, so maybe I'll do that by the pool. So
that's right. Waste your vacation trying to find an old bad take from it.
Exactly. So let's talk about where do we see Paspalum grass, and what guys have done well there. So on the PGA Tour, there's three. And it's all the courses that A, have no strokes gain data, and B, they have no shot link. So for whatever reason, PGA Tour is too cheap to bring all the lasers and everything to Punta Cana or Puerto Rico or Mexico, but that's what we do. So the Mayakoba, the Puerto Rico Open, the Corrales, Punta Cana Championship, all at Paspalum. Those are the only three. So what guys have done pretty well there? Well, I can name one off the top of my head, Victor Hovland. His two career wins are on Paspalum. He won the Mayakoba, he won Puerto Rico. So there's something. Tony Finau, we rag on him for never winning, but you know his only win came on? Came in Puerto Rico and passed Paspalum. He also has two tops in the Mayakoba. That might be something to look at. And then Graham McDowell is actually he's the king of Paspalum. So he actually has three wins on Paspalum golf course. He won the Mayakoba. He's won Corrales. And then now we're going to transition to the European Tour, which will lead to may explain why 2012 happened. There's a lot of golf courses in the Middle East that use Paspalum. And one of them is the Saudi International, Royal Greens and Country Club, where they play, the Saudi Open. So he won that as well. So he's won three times at Paspalum. Now he's terrible now. He's not in form, but I think he actually played well in 2012 at Kiawah. Kind of explains it a little bit. So some other guys have done pretty well in these services. Brandon Grace won the Puerto Rico Open this year. He played pretty well. He usually plays pretty well like Abu Dhabi over in the Middle East. That's also Paspalum. They have Bermuda greens, but tee to greens, Paspalum. So it's similar. Noble guys have won Mayakoba, Matt Kuchar, Brendan Todd, Charlie Hoff, and Harris English. So, those guys are going to be in the PGA. They're all going to be longer shots, maybe consider them. Abu Dhabi, though, and the Saudi, those are when we get into a little better players. I mean, all the European players, a lot of the top Englishmen, top Irishmen, like they do pretty well over there. So like Tyrrell Hatton won Abu Dhabi this year. Yep. Lee West was a former winner. Shane Lowry is a former winner. He won that event before he won the Open Championship in 2019. Your boy Tommy Fleetwood won it twice, 2 years in a row. Ricky Fowler's even won at Abu Dhabi. He also has played Mayakoba pretty well. So that's another guy who's going to pass.
Is he even going to qualify? He's not even going to qualify.
No, they'll figure out how to get him in the field. So, and then Paul Casey is a two-time winner of an Abu Dhabi, so there's some Paspalum. And then Saudi International, Dustin Johnson's won that twice. Tony Finau actually also finished top 10 at the Saudi this year. Victor Hovland finished T6 at the Saudi. So there's some.
DJ won it.
Yeah, DJ won it twice. So there you go. And then another Paspalum connection. Do you know what the Bears Club is?
No.
Okay, so in Jupiter, Florida, this is Jack Nicklaus's private club. It's where a lot of the Jupiter guys, they all live down there.
Yeah.
They all play the Bears Club, and that's Paspalum. So Rory McIlroy actually pointed to before the 2012 PGA at Kiawah. He said, the Bears Club where I play all the time, that's Paspalum. So I think I'm gonna have a little bit of an edge on how to play it. And then he went out and beat everybody by 8. So guys who live in Jupiter, Florida, which is pretty much everybody, a lot of the top players, they play the Bears Club, they play Paspalum. So Justin Thomas plays Bears Club all the time. DJ plays Bears Club all the time. And he's won the Saudi twice. Rory plays Bears Club all the time. He won the Kiawah. So, I mean, I didn't I didn't go down the Google rabbit hole to find out who's actually played at the Bears Club.
Don't worry. That is what I'll be doing after this podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. We have a month to find out what guys play a lot at the Bears Club, because like we mentioned, this is not a familiar grass type to what these guys see every week. So, I mean, if I could make a close comparison, like at least putting wise, probably putts like Bermuda, or I'm sorry, it putts like bent grass because there's no grain. It's a vertical growing grass. It putts more true. So that might explain like why Finau was done well in past Palm, because he generally putts better on bent grass. I think DJ generally putts better on bent grass. Like a lot of his wins are on like bent grass golf courses. I think Hovland plays a little better on bent grass too. So that might if you're looking for like you're not going to find strokes gained putting data anywhere on this because shot length's not maintained. If you're looking for like how these guys generally putt, I would probably look more to bent grass because that seems to be a similar role type to past Palm.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, that is pretty sweet. Well, listen, before I guess we get into any trends, I know you want to hit 2012 too. So we'll hit 2012 and then we'll get into some trends. But before I do that, where did it go? Sorry. Better than Vegas. It's like YouTube, but for what DGens only care about. Sports betting. We're giving out our free daily video picks over that Better Than Vegas profile page. Better Than Vegas is always running a ton of free contests as well. They got a ton of free picks and handicappers to check out. Make sure to subscribe to our profile so you don't miss a pick. SportsGamblingPodcast.com/BTV. That's SportsGamblingPodcast.com/BTV. And listen, Sports Gambling Podcast is now on Riffer. Riffer is your home for mini episodes or free picks from the SGPN crew. If you don't have time to listen to an entire episode, Riffer is a perfect quick fix. Make sure to subscribe to SGPN page by going to sportsgamblingpodcast.com/Riffer. That's sportsgamblingpodcast.com/RIFFR. I'm sure I'll be doing those soon, so I'll put those out as well. And if you'd like short, I can talk really fast. I get a ton of info out there real fast.
Yeah, I mean, maybe Riffer's not for me because I spend a half hour talking about grass there. So, yeah, kind of hard for me to condense all that into 2 minutes, but you know what? I will try.
Yeah, and listen, that's important. You're right. Like, it is important. Like, it's a grass type that they don't play. And look, obviously, I play in fucking Florida. Shit, like, this is where I live, right? So I'm used to Bermuda. But anytime I play out of state and it's not Bermuda, it is different. It's weird. It's like, oh, well, that's weird. Like, I can actually kind of get the ball a little bit around the green.
Right, and it's interesting to see kind of those, like, little connections, too, as far as, like, where past Palm is and like guys like going like the Hovland like Finau thing, like, you know, like doing really good in Mayakoba and Puerto Rico and then going over to Saudi and both playing well. I mean, listen, they're both really good players, but there's a little bit of a connection there. So, and then we're going to talk about European connection too, because I touched briefly on Abu Dhabi. We'll get to that basically right now. We talk about the 2012 PGA. So I've heard a couple narratives about Kiawav over the past couple months where I think people want to focus on the fact that it's 7,700 yards and they think it's just a bomber's golf course. And it's not really. Like, I mean, it's long for everybody, but if you look at, and there's a great video on YouTube of it, just you can see Rory McIlroy's every single shot he hit in the final round, and he was flawless. It was perfect golf. I mean, he missed a couple of fairways, but I mean, the reason why is he hit it long and straight. I mean, that's why he just boat raced field. He putt really well that week, too. But if you look at some of his club choices, and I want to look mostly at the par fours, like that's really where you want to look at, like, okay, is this a lesson driver golf course? Is this a little bit of a balance? Is this driver heavy? Well, there are 10 par fours on the golf course. Five of them he used a 3-wood in order to play positional golf, and five he used a driver. So, and then he used, you know, driver on all four of the par fives, and then an iron on all four of the par threes. So, you know, you're using a 3-wood playing positional golf a little more on this place than you think. You're sacrificing distance in order to stay, you know, behind all the trouble. Like, and if when I talk about the golf course in more detail in a month, I'll talk about how it's a typical Pete Dye golf course where you got to play positional golf. You know, he puts hazards inconveniently, the fairway snake a little bit. There's like on number two, I think that, or it's either two or three, it's a short par four, but there's a tree right in the middle of the fairway, like about 300 yards out that you got to navigate around. And you know, you do have to think a way around your golf course. And, you know, like I said earlier, even though there is not a whole lot of trouble, like, I mean, it's with past Palm, once the ball hits the turf, it's pretty easy to hit fairways. and the rough isn't that deep. But outside of that, like, you cannot spray the ball. So if you look at this leaderboard, it's definitely not bombers for sure. Mm-hmm. There's a really good mix of, like, there's longer hitters, sure. Like, Rory McIlroy won. He's a very long hitter. I mean, Bubba Watson finished, I think, like, T15. You know, long hitter. Even John Daly played pretty well. I forgot that he was in the mix of this. He was, you know, he ranked highly still in, you know, driving distance that year. He was still ninth in 2012. I think he was, like, almost 50 years old at that point. Adam Scott, you know, he was a big bomber back in 2012. But you have all these shorter hitters, too. And there's a lot of Europeans here that play a lot of more, like, position golf, better with their longer irons.
David Lynn. I don't remember who David Lynn is.
Oh, I tell you about David Lynn. So he had a pretty good moment from like 2012 to 2014. He actually lost in a playoff to, remember Derek Ernst at Quail Hollow?
Yeah.
That was David Lynn. Him.
So I'm like, I was looking at this name and I'm like, I know it, but I can't remember a fucking thing about this guy.
Yeah, I mean, he was basically a shooting star, but. So, you know, there's a couple guys on here that, you know, for the most part, you can find, like, their PGA Tour stats of the year. But there's three of them that mostly played all European Tour of the year. Peter Hansen. So he was basically a bomber. You know, he was long, but he was pretty inaccurate off the player. He was above average iron player, really streaky putter. Jamie Donaldson, who, you know, he's been on a Ryder Cup team. Like, that, he's famous for the 2014 Ryder Cup where I think he partied all night and they interviewed him on in the morning. He was all hungover. He had, like, you know, like red eyes and everything. Well, he's, you know, he's the type of guy who's like a balanced driver. He had above average accuracy and length. You know, he wasn't really a great iron player. He's an elite putter. So that's a contrast to Peter Hansen there. And David Lynn, short hitter, you know, pretty accurate, you know, average iron player, but he was an elite putter and an elite scrambler too. And then you have, like, you know, Ian Poulter up there. Blake Adams, who was just, like, scrub, like, web top guy. But he was, like, a decent putter. He was pretty accurate off the tee. You know, Steve Stricker was up there. Ben Curtis made a run. Like, I mean, he was, you know, really good iron player, pretty accurate. He was a good putter, but he had no distance. Graham McDowell, you know, did well in this tournament, too. He was in the mix for a little bit. Bo Van Pelt. You know, he's kind of a little bit of a balanced player, really bad scrambler, but he did everything else pretty well. So,
Are you just skipping over one person just to piss me off?
Oh, Tiger Woods?
I swear to fucking God, you're doing it on purpose.
Keegan Bradley.
God damn it, man.
Well, like, because I don't want to remind you of the fact that once upon a time, Keegan Bradley ranked inside the top 40 in strokes game putting, and then they took away his belly putter, and it just wrecked his career.
Yeah, well, he needs to try the arm lock cheating like everybody else is doing now.
I think he is, and it's not helping.
That's because it's cheating, and Keegan's above cheating, and he's just going to...
That's for another podcast, though. So, yeah, I mean, listen, like, Keegan, like, you know, the only thing he didn't really do well that year was... He was a pretty bad scrambler, but good iron player. Like, so it seems like, though, if you want to take, like, everybody's, like, strokes gain statistics for 2012 and, like, try and figure out a common link, because this is all mostly pretty different golfers, the ball striking stats tended to be favored a little more. Like, guys who did pretty well tee to green, off the tee, and approach shots, like their average of these, like, 20 guys is about 45th. So that's pretty good. Like, if you move to, like, the scrambling category, it's about 85th. Putting is still a little hit or miss. And I guess I can explain that to, you know, it's a Pete Dye golf course. You got to hit the ball pretty well, tee to green. The pass palm makes it so, you know, once you hit the green, it's pretty easier to hold it. You know, I mean, it's wind dependent. So if you're scrambling a little, you know, off the tee, or if you scramble a little more, you know, it's not as important, so guys can get away with it. But here's what's interesting, though. So if you take those 20 guys and take what their average ranks in the PGA Tour in 2012 were between driving distance and driving accuracy, their average ranking was 75th in driving distance. Their average in driving accuracy was also 75th. So literally, this is going to be a pretty wide open tournament.
Nice.
You know, there's a lot of guys who basically, if they play their own game pretty well, they can have good success here. Like, there's no real one way to beat this golf course. Like, in 2019, we went to Bethpage Black. We all knew it was either going to be Brooks Koepka or Dustin Johnson. Just for real. And they finished 1-2.
Yeah, that was one of those ones where you should have bet the fucking exact order, like, goddamn dog racing. Exacta. You know what I mean? Like, Christ, like, I can't wait. There has to be another golf course like that coming up, because I feel like I missed the boat. I did not bet that. Like, but that is something that was right up my alley that I should have bet.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably going to be Torrey Pines in a month. So it's going to be all the Bombers and Patrick Reed. So there you go. But back to this tournament, I mean, there's just, if you look at the 2012 leaderboard, there's a lot of different types of golfers, different types of life. And then, like, a lot of these guys are able to do it in their own way, too. So, like, let's take a couple of examples. So Justin Rose, like, basically, he was a teetering god that year, just an awful putter. But if you look at what he ranked during that week, like, he drove the ball really well. That week, he led the field in greens regulation. He was almost dead last in putting. So that fit exactly what he did in 2012. And you look at a guy like Steve Stricker. He finished in the top 20. He was in the mix, too. Not very good driving the ball that year. Did not drive the ball great as far as, like, distance and accuracy. He was missing a lot of fairways. But he did pretty well his irons and putt pretty well, too. That's kind of Steve Stricker's MO back then. So he did exactly what he did. You know, Jamie Donaldson was kind of balanced all over the place. You know, he was about middle of the pack with the greens. He drove the ball pretty well and putt lights out. That's what he did in 2012. Ben Curtis, the same thing. You know, he's one of the shortest hitters in the field, but he led the field in driving accuracy. That's one an elite quality he had during that year. And he ended up, you know, he hit a lot of greens pretty, you know, too. He was a pretty good iron player that year. If you have a week, I guess if I can sum it up this way, if you want to look at, like, guys you want to target, is, you know, target guys with a couple elite skill sets. And if they have some major red flags, as long as they can kind of, like, duct tape it around there, you can get around and have some success. And, like, I look at this leaderboard, and it kind of reminds me of, like, a classic TPC Sawgrass Players Championship leaderboard, where there's a lot to it. Like, you know, you get pretty much everything there. And now with the Bentgrass, you kind of get, like, one type of player that does well there. But back when it was, like, Bermuda, back when it was in May, it was a little more windier and, like, firm and fast. You got these weird leaderboards, and it didn't seem like it was consistency year to year. It's kind of what I'm seeing here. So I think you just got to – it's going to open up the field as far as guys can do well. And, you know, just take a look about who players are, you know, what they're doing well, if you think that they can kind of mask their deficiencies because, you know, and, you know, and be able to carry them to win because, you know, there's a lot of ways to succeed on this golf course as long as you're playing really well at the things you're really good at.
Yeah, okay. I mean, how are we going to talk about – we can talk about the trends that we were texting about last night?
Oh, absolutely. Part two was talking about the 2012 leaderboard.
Okay. I really want to talk about these trends.
Now part three is talking about what you really want to care about, trends.
That's it.
And this is overall of, like, who wins the PGA Championship.
Right.
So I look back to 2010. That's 11 PGA Championships. And there's a couple things. So what types of guys win? Like, where do they fall on the odds board? You know, as far as they do. So nine of the last 11 winners of the PGA Championship were at least 40-1 or better at close. And, like, I think there's a little bit of a misnomer that the PGA Championship is pretty random and there's more unexpected winners here. I think probably what clouds our brain with that is there's a lot of, like, in the 2000s, like, there's a lot of random winners. Like, you had Rich Beam and Hadleton in 2002. You had Sean McKeel in my backyard, no kill, with the greatest 7-iron in history. He's got a plaque there. He's a one-and-done guy. You know, he won. Like, Y.E. Yang when he upset Tiger at Hazeltine in 2009. But in the last 11 years, generally the favorites have won. The only two outliers are your boy Keegan Bradley in 2011 when he won Atlanta Athletic Club over just Jason Duffner, who also kind of came out of nowhere that year. That was a weird
year. That was a weird year. Yeah.
And then Jimmy Walker kind of coming out of nowhere and winning.
I don't bite.
Yeah, basically winning a tournament that pretty much no one remembers. That was that weird year where they had the Open Championship and then 2 weeks later they had the PGA.
Yeah.
So I think everyone was just kind of golfed out at that point. I don't remember much of that tournament other than Jason Day, like, hitting a big eagle putt and then staring back at Walker. And then Walker almost blowing it at the end, but he ended up winning. So, but other than that, though, like, it's pretty much everybody under 40-1. Like, 7 of the last 11 were 30-1 or better. So it's just, it's not a tournament where, and I guess I kind of look at, like, the typical PGA setups. They're kind of like WGCs.
They're basically scoring.
Yeah, just like, there's, I mean, I think Key was a little different because there is a little bit that you don't see at other places. But, like, a lot of these are, like, Parkland golf courses. A lot of them are just, like, stuff we see at all these other places, like right. Valhalla, that PGA was actually on earlier, and it looked exactly like the Memorial. I mean, Oak Hill is basically like, I don't know, it's a Donald Ross golf course that I basically can see during the FedEx Cup playoffs, or TPC Harding Park, same thing.
Right.
Like all these soft golf courses that, you know, don't really add anything new to these guys, but Kiawah might be different. So maybe we see a little bit of a longer shot, you know, win this. And there are some good trends though that I have found. So 10 of the last
drop knowledge. Let's go. This is the exciting stuff, man. Come on. Get excited about it.
This is important.
This is the nuggets we all want, man.
Okay. So 10 of the last 11 winners of the PGA Championship had won multiple times anywhere in the world. Could be any stroke play event, could be in Australia, could be in Korea, could be on the Korn Ferry Tour, could be whatever.
Korn Ferry counts?
Well, I'm going to cheat one guy when we talk about the list, but no. I didn't find anybody that won a Korn Ferry event and did this, but I found a lot of guys who actually won pretty crappy events that basically would qualify Korn Ferry and still won, so that they count. The only guy who didn't have multiple wins before they won the PGA was Keegan, but he won earlier that year. Okay. So he at least had a winner in his belt. The only guy, and then 9 of the last 11 at least won once in the last year. Now with COVID, that's a little dicey. So maybe take it back 2 years. I mean, that's a stronger trend anyways. Like even Jimmy Walker had won twice in the last 2 years before he won. Jason Dufferin did the same thing too. Right. So, you know, that's a good trend. And then 9 of the last 11 winners had at least a top 10 in the 5 tournaments leading up to the tournament. So form obviously is in play. I'll mention in a minute why that might get a little dicey this year. But here's a really weird one. And I think this is your favorite.
It is.
And I'm not sure how legit this is, but it's a trend. Every single winner of the PGA or for the last 11 years has missed a cut at least once in 5 events leading up to it, which is odd. It's very strange.
Yeah.
So I don't know if there's anything to it. I've combed basically anyone who could probably play this tournament and found out guys who fit all these criteria. Now, where things might get a little dicey is now that this tournament is in May and there's some weird tournaments around it. Like, for example, we have talked about ad nauseum. Does WGC match play, should it matter? And I take the position, even though I think it's overrated, I think that probably should matter a little bit because you are playing your own ball. You are kind of in control whether you do well or not. I think it should count. So if you get a top 10 or you win it or whatever, that probably should count towards your tally. I will be using it. But we also have the Zurich thrown in there. I'm not going to use it. No, that's going to get skipped.
Yeah.
That is a tournament where you have literally no control. Sometimes over whether you do. I mean, you could play lights out, and if your partner sucks, you're screwed an alternate shot. You're not going to finish top 10. So throw that out. I will be using match play. I know that makes you happy because you think match play should count.
Well, but what's funny is when I was going through my shit last night, I'm not counting it. Just I'm just not like.
So I went through mine, and I starred a couple, and how I did it right now is we're looking at it right now. So. Yeah. Guys, there are, excluding the Zurich, there are 3 events between now and the PGA where guys could play. So you got to think everyone's going to play at least once. So I looked back the last 4, and I know I'm going to have to do this exercise again the week of the PGA, which it didn't take me that long. It took me probably about 45 minutes. Yeah. That's not a big deal. So I looked back at the last 4 and found guys who had at least 2 wins in the last 2 years, 2 calendar years, not 2 like PGA Tour years, and had at least a top 10, including the WC match play in the last 4. So why don't we talk about guys right now, like top favorites who don't qualify?
Oh, that's okay. Let's do that.
Okay. So right off the bat, Dustin Johnson doesn't qualify because he hasn't had a top 10 in the last 5.
Yeah.
No, he hasn't. Or last 4, I'm sorry. So you got to figure he's going to probably play Quail.
Yeah.
Doesn't get a top 10 there. He does not qualify. So he does have 2 wins, but he doesn't have a top 10. So.
And he missed the cut at the Masters.
Well, that would actually help.
That would help. That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
But he needs a top 10. He doesn't have it.
Okay.
Xander Schauffele hasn't won since the century. He's out. So he has not had multiple wins in the last 2 years.
Oh, it's T13. I fucking swear.
Well, he does have multiple wins, so it doesn't matter.
No. I'm talking about DJ. I was still looking at DJ. I was like, okay. Fuck, I swear. Yeah. It was T13.
Yeah.
Fuck. Okay.
Jordan Spieth does not have multiple wins the last 2 years.
Nope.
Out. Hideki does not have multiple wins the last 2 years. Out. Patrick Cantlay does not have a top 10 in his last 4.
Plenty of miscuts, though.
So what's that?
He said miscut, though, motherfucker.
He doesn't miscut. He's had 2 wins. So if he gets one between now and...
He won't.
All right, we'll see. Tony Finau does not have multiple wins anywhere since 2016. Tommy Fleetwood does not have multiple wins. So he's missed a cut. He's got top 10. Does not have multiple wins. Kind of cheated. I thought Will Zalatoris might... qualify because he's
the Corn Ferry.
He only won once in Corn Ferry, so he's out too.
Okay.
Terrell Hatton does not have a top 10.
Top 10 yet.
In the last 5. He's not playing great lately. It's kind of unfortunate. Joaquin Neiman hasn't won since the Greenbrier. He's out. Cam Smith and Matthew Fitzpatrick. I know they're probably going to be really popular names. They just missed. So Cam Smith
has 2 top 10s.
Well, I'm talking about the wins.
Oh, yeah.
So Cam Smith won the 2018 Australian PGA, which falls just outside that window. And he won the
six. See, I counted that because it was when I ran 1920 season, that popped up.
Oh, because of the Zurich?
Maybe.
Yeah, I'm not counting the Zurich.
Okay.
Although, no, that that's 2018.
I'm trusting you.
So the 2 year clock starts with the PGA Bethpage Black.
Okay.
So his PGA win was the winter 2018. So that doesn't count. He won the Sony. So that's one. And then Fitzpatrick, I think he fell just short too. He won the DP World Championship in Dubai. And I think he won like the, I don't know, Dutch Open or something in 2018. That didn't count. So those are the top favorites. So who does count? So we're gonna ignore the miscuts first. We're just going to talk about multiple wins the last 2 years and top 10 the last 4. So of a lot of the big favorites qualified. You know, you got Rahm, JT. Rory actually qualifies because he still has a top 10 in his last 4.
Not by the time we get the fuck.
Well, that is the thing. That may fall off. So, right. But for now, he does. Bryson, Brooks, I mean, he hasn't played a whole lot. But he still technically qualifies. Morikawa qualifies. Hovland qualifies on a technicality if you throw out WGC match play, which, I mean, it's probably not going to matter anyways because I think he's going to play at least Quail, probably play one more time. So he needs to get a top 10 between now and the PGA in order to qualify. Yeah. So now we're getting into interesting ones. Guys over 30-1 to qualify. Daniel Berger, Webson St. Patrick, Reed. All of them are about 33-1 or so. Those are pretty sexy names for Kiowa.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so they all qualify. Here's cheating a little bit. Scotty Scheffler won twice on the Corn Ferry Tour.
Oh.
He has top 10 in his last 4.
No.
Listen, don't shoot the messenger. I'm just giving facts, okay? You can decide if you want all this to count, okay? Okay. I'm just telling you guys.
Corn Ferry does not count.
Fine. All right, Paul Casey, 2 Euro wins and a top 10. That should count.
And
Sungjae, he just
missed a cut, too.
And, well, we're going to get to that.
Oh, all right, I'm sorry. I get excited.
Stop. We're going to get to that. Sungjae Im counts. He won over in Korea before he won the Honda. Oh. And that's in the 2 year window. It counts. Fine. Sergio Garcia has won twice in the last 2 years, and he's got a top 10 in the last 4. So there we go. Now we're getting some long shots.
Super long shots.
Christian Bezuidenhout. Mm-hmm. Now, again, this is cheating a little bit because if you don't include the match play, he finished top 10 at Arnold Palmer. He won twice. He won 2 in a row in South Africa last winter.
Mm-hmm.
So he counts. He's 125-1. Here's a guy who I think you're going to auto bet.
All right, go on.
Matt Jones qualifies.
Oh, does he really?
He won the Aussie PGA in 2019.
How the fuck did I miss that?
Because you probably didn't look where I look.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Yeah. So he won the Honda, won the Aussie PGA in the winter 2019, had the top 10 in the last 4. He counts. Stuart Sink now counts.
I know.
There you go. And then now we're going to get a bunch of guys. I don't know if they're even going to qualify to be in the PGA, but here's some Euro guys who, listen, you're probably burning your money if you do, but just for argument's sake, they qualify. So, Rasmus Højgaard, remember him? He played Corrales or something?
Yep.
He qualifies. Do you know who Takumi Kanaya is? He's like the next Hideki.
He's won a shit ton over in Europe.
Yeah, or Japan. Yeah, he's like the next Hideki. He's like this 20-year-old phenom.
I thought he won over in the Middle East too.
No, he's won a couple times. No, okay. He just won last week in Japan.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so he qualifies. Antoine Rosner, the guy who took down Bryson at WC Match Play, he qualifies.
Oh.
He's actually kind of interesting. So, John Catlin, he's actually an American playing on the Euro Tour. He's up to like 70th in the world, so he actually might play this PGA. He might give him an invite. He qualifies. Some guy named Daniel Van Tonder, some South African, he qualifies. Sam Horsfield, this young English guy, he won twice at during like that weird like Euro Tour schedule last year where they were playing like the English Open, the Welsh Open, like really weird stuff. Welsh. Anyways, he won twice.
Welsh, not Welsh, not no grape juice. Whatever.
And then George Kotsaya, remember him? So here's an interesting one. So he qualifies. He actually finished top 10 when this PGA was at Whistling Straits.
Really?
It's kind of a very similar golf course to Kiowa. So that might be someone to maybe keep your eye on the radar. If he gets in this field, I have no idea he's going to be in the field. So, so all those guys, there's also the criteria of who's missed a cut in the last four. A couple of them don't. So John Rahm has not missed a cut in his last four. So he's got to miss a cut. Although that's actually another lean. You can miss a cut, but it can't be the start before the PGA.
Oh, jeez.
So Rahm might.
They got two. They got to miss the cut. Not this week, but 2 weeks following.
Well, I'm not counting the Zurich. So
that's what I'm saying. It's not this week. That's what I'm saying. So two weeks
following. I think Rahm's only going to play the Quail. So
he's not missing the cut of Quail.
Okay. Well, there you go.
Fuck.
According to his lean, he's out.
Yes. So,
Bryson DeChambeau has not missed a cut his last four. So. I don't think he's a good fit for his golf course anyways. I'm probably really going to fade him. Yeah. Morikawa has not missed a cut in his last four. So you can scratch those guys. Everybody else on the list that I mentioned, I mean, besides Bazayton, who, of the favorites under, 100-1,
yeah,
they count. So here's the guys under 100-1 that actually fit this criteria of 2-plus wins the last 2 years, has a top 10 in the last four, and then we have a buffer event coming up, and then has missed a cut. So Justin Thomas, Rory McIlroy, Brooks Koepka, Victor Hovland, depending if you care.
All right, let's go.
Daniel Berger, Webb Simpson, Patrick Reed, Scottie Scheffler, which I'm counting, you're not going to count. Paul Casey, Sung J.M., who's interesting, and Sergio Garcia.
Yeah.
So that fits all those leans. Now, here's another problem with this, too.
It's all changing.
Remember how many? No. Remember how many leans we had about the Masters? Which,
yeah,
your famous one you gave out the one in the morning. Well, I had a bunch too. Like, top 10 strokes gained tee to green. Yeah. They won the last year. Like stuff like that. Yeah. Well, Hideki didn't fit any of those.
Oh.
No, he didn't fit a single one. Like he was like 24th in strokes gained tee to green. He hadn't won 3 years.
Yeah.
Like it just, they didn't fit, and he ended up winning.
Yeah, it's cool.
So it's like we said, a trend is only a trend until it
is broken.
Until it's broken.
Yeah, exactly.
So, but that's interesting. Now, I'm not telling you to bet like that, but maybe keep that in mind. Like, if you're down between two guys, keep that in mind, and that might break a tie, and maybe that'll end up coming through. So,
yeah. All right.
All right. And then I guess want to talk about who we bet already?
Sure. I already told you I don't remember all of them. I know I got Hatton and Hovland. I got down on Reed.
Okay.
And there was
what odds do you have on Reed? Because I'm interested.
I think I got him at 42. I don't remember what book I have, man. I'll have to look.
He's down to under 40 now, and I'm waiting at this point.
Yeah.
I'm saving some bullets.
It was on a longer shot. I can't remember who the fuck it was. Oh my God, dude! Is Keegan gonna play?
Yeah, Keegan's gonna play.
It's 2,500-1.
Yeah, so basically, we're gonna get a bunch of exemptions after the Whales. I think it's anyone in the top 70 of the FedEx Cup points if they're not already exempt. And then I think there's like top 60 in the world. He should get in. So
yeah, 2,500-1.
Keegan's a former winner of the PGA, of course, yeah. He's playing. Yeah.
So, so I mean, how can't you throw a little chunk on that? Right. Sorry. Yeah. Right. You know what? I think it was Leishman. I can't remember what fucking number I got him on though. Okay. It was only like 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
God, I know it's I think it's above 60-1.
Okay. All right. How about I go over my list?
Yeah. Got it.
So I got to, I have a couple of regrets. Guys, like I said after the Masters, I need to stop playing this value game of betting guys, like especially guys under 50-1, because I gotta say the bullets. So I have six right now. I am probably going to stop until the week of the PGA.
Okay.
I don't see much movement in guys under 50-1 right now that would pique my interest. So guy I regret right now because this turned very bad. I got Patrick Cantlay at 30-1. I suspect that number will probably get bet up to like 22, just like it did at the Masters. He's not playing great. Not awesome. Two I placed pretty early, though, because of the pass problem lead. I got Finau and Hovland both at 40-1 right now. I actually like that. I like that.
No problem with that.
I think Finau might end up winning this thing. Like,
it's, how cool would that be, by the way?
It would be. And you know what? This is basically just a souped-up WGC.
No.
It kind of fits some of his, you know, his strengths. So, and I really like the Hovland one, too. That number is down to, like, under 30-1 right
yeah,
now.
Yeah.
I like that. Hovland there.
Thanks for the lead on that, Steve.
Tyrrell Hatton, 45-1. Slight regret. He's really...
I slightly regret that, too.
I mean, I bet that right after he went to Abu Dhabi, like, yeah. And the kind of four fell out. Now, here's two that I think are going to make you really jealous.
Okay.
They're both 125-1.
Ooh, okay.
Okay, about a month ago, found Cam Smith 125-1.
What?
Yep. This was before I think it was right after he had a top 10 somewhere. And I caught a book napping.
God.
I bet that. And then this is why you need to shop around prices. I caught a book napping on Monday at Corey Connors 125-1.
Okay, I'm definitely jealous of that. That's fucking, it's like two times the odds that are available.
Never mind, Cam Smith one.
Man, if you ever see one of my guys fucking hanging a number like that, I don't give a shit what time of day it is. Fucking text me and I will immediately go bet it. What are you doing?
I don't think you let me down, bro. I don't think you have access to this book, unfortunately.
And
they're not accepting new deposits. So, yeah, I'm actually looking for a way out.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. So, but it's there. So if anybody's on that book, and it's a much worse book than WinBet, but yes, so those are the six I have, and then I'm probably just gonna wait. I mean, there's a lot of guys I mentioned up top, like Webb really piques my interest, Patrick Reed piques my interest. I actually posted a column that's good that went up a couple hours ago about value plays. I mentioned Cam Smith, he's 50-1 right now. That number, I've seen a lot of 30s on him. So if you can still find a 50, I think you should bet it. He doesn't fit the trend, but you know what? I mean, he's playing great. You know, he fits a lot of good. There's a lot of things about that, about his game that fits Kiowa. If you can find a 50, bet it. I'm really intrigued by the Sungjae 60-1 number. And I've kind of here. Everyone's off him. And here's, I've been maybe a little unfair to him. And I looked a little deeper into Sungjae because he does have a lot of like top 20s lately. So the strokes gained stats are lying a little bit. He hits every fairway and he's got decent length. So his strokes gained off the tee numbers are awesome. The strokes gained approach numbers are awful, but he ranks 29th in greens irregulation percentage. So something is not adding up there. I'm not exactly sure why. But when you're hitting as well you are off the tee and you're hitting all the greens and you're as good of a putter as he is, you're going to do well. And he's an elite putter. He has elite accuracy. I mean, I named a couple guys in the 2012 leaderboard that basically fit his exact profile.
Yeah, it's probably the wrong number. But
well, it's 60-1 right now.
Yeah, it's, dude, look, I mean, I hear you.
Yeah, it's just different. It's different than when he was like 35. And I was like, okay, yeah, let's pump the brace. Now it's 60, and he's not popular. That number might keep sliding. I might end up jumping on that if it gets a little more. And then Matt Wallace is 150-1. Like, he fits. There was a lot of Euro players that did really well at Kiowa in 2012. He kind of fits that mold now. Like, I like the fact that it seems like he replaces Caddy with Gareth Lord. He used to carry for my boy Henrik Stenson and not your boy Justin Rose. used to be his guy, and it seems like it's been working out pretty well ever since.
Yeah,
and I mentioned they've mentioned the Valero that like Wallace a real hothead, Gareth Lord's really laid back. It seems like the two are really like meshing well. And he's been playing great. He's 150-1. So
that's how when me and Tommy get on the course, that's how we play well, because I'm a fucking lunatic and Tommy's fucking laid back, and so I feed off some of his stuff and he's able to rein me in, man.
Are you comparing yourself to Matt Wallace and Gareth Lord?
Oh, shut the fuck up. No.
All right. So anyway, so those are the bets we're on. You can go read in my column. Like if you can find those prices, you know, maybe jump on that. But I would probably wait. If you haven't gotten anything right now, unless you can find anybody 50-1 or more. You know, you don't need to bet like Berger right now. You don't need to bet Reed. Like, they're all priced down. See what the weather is. See what their form is. And we still have a month away. You know, a lot can change. Like, I know I read off a lot of those names up top that fit the narrative right now. They might not fit that, those trends in a month. So, you know, anyone under 50-1, you don't have to bet. You know, lay off and let's see what happens.
All right, man. Listen, I agree. So, listen, come to the Slack channel. We'll drop some in-round stuff if we see anything interesting for the Zurich. The DraftKings thing ran this week. So if you want to come play DraftKings with us, man, hit us up on the link and you can come play on that. I randomly threw a lineup in there and hopefully I remember to change it. And yeah, other than that, man, follow me on Twitter, boss_cap, or go to all Steve's articles at sportsgamblingpodcast.com. The Slack link is in his bio. Come get his knowledge as the weekend goes for the round-to-round matchups and everything else. And yeah, I mean, other than that, fuck it. Let's break the books. Let's go.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.